Hey everyone, it's Phil Bailey here from the London, Ontario Real Estate Podcast. We're on episode 21 of the podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about what you should be thinking about if you want to get into real estate investing in London. Maybe you're looking at buying your first investment property. You don't know where to start. Maybe you've already started the research and you just have some questions about that. But before we get started on the podcast today, I did just want to let you all know that I have some personal news to announce as well, which is that I have switched brokerages. So if you follow me on social media, you probably already know that I've done this, but I'm now with the House Sigma team in London. I've done this for many reasons. One of the biggest ones is that most of my clients were already using House Sigma to make buying and selling decisions in the London area. So I thought, hey, let's just join the party and join the House Sigma team directly. I know that a lot of people use the app to, you know, check on what maybe their neighbor's house sold for, but we're also a full service brokerage in London. So I'm still Phil, I'm still a realtor. I just happen to work with House Sigma now. I think it'll give all of my clients really a better user experience, great technology that they're using to really give you the data and put you in the driver's seat to be able to still allow me to obviously to guide you through that process once you've got the preliminary work out of the way. In addition to that, I've also moved houses myself, so that's been keeping me busy, but I promise to be back with more podcasts. We're getting started today into August here, but for the fall, we're definitely going to be back with a lot more episodes for you. So again, today on the podcast, I really wanted to get into talking about what you should be thinking about if from a financing perspective or really just a personal perspective as well, if you're looking at getting into real estate investing in London. So if you have no real estate portfolio at all, you don't really know what a lot of this means, this may be a good episode to listen to. If you've already maybe bought a couple investments, it still is probably a really good refresher for you to think about certain things from a financing perspective or a personal perspective as well when looking at an investment in the London area. So today, I've got a great guest for you today. His name is Spencer Murray. He's a mortgage broker in London with the Modern Mortgage Company in London, someone that I know personally and that is a real estate investor himself. So it's someone that I thought would be good to get on the podcast and just chat through some of the questions that I'm hearing from my clients a lot. So Spencer, tell me a little bit about yourself and thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Phil. I appreciate it. So my name is Spencer Murray from the Modern Mortgage Unlimited Company here in London, Ontario. As Phil mentioned, you know, I am a mortgage broker, so I have access to a handful of different lenders to hopefully suit any need that somebody needs. And I am a real estate investor myself. So it's an interesting game.
Absolutely. No. Yeah. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast, Spencer. I really appreciate it. I know I get a lot of questions from my clients about getting started in real estate investing and what people should be thinking about. One of the biggest ones that I get, and one of the questions I wanted to kick things off with, was really just what are the differences they should be thinking about from a financing perspective when they're dealing with an investment property versus just, you know, buying a house for their family.
Yeah, there's a few things to consider if they are planning on purchasing an investment property, whether it's owner occupied with an investment component or sort of with a separate unit, or if it's just owner occupied. A lot of things kind of overlap, but for the most part, like one of the things that needs to be considered first and foremost is rate. Lenders are a bit more risk averse with rental properties. So given that they tend to add some rate premiums to their standard rates for pure rental properties with no owner-occupied component. If there is an owner-occupied component, then best rates or owner-occupied rates apply. The second part is that lenders will consider rental income to support the mortgage, but what a lot of people don't understand is they don't necessarily take 100% of the possible rental income into account. They usually go with about 50% of the rents and then kind of take a look at debt servicing from there. And then same thing goes with, an owner-occupied property with the additional unit. And then the last part to consider is down payment. So if the property has one of the units occupied by the owners, then minimum down payments apply. Clients can potentially purchase with less than 20% down, which is great. They would just be limited to a 25-year amortization and the insurer's guidelines with regards to borrowing. If the property is a full-on rental, single-family home, duplex, triplex, but the intention is to have it fully rented out, then lenders will typically want to see 20% down. Some may want to see 25% down, depending on the property, depending on the situation. But the benefit of that is that it gives us access to a 30-year amortization, which will help with both cash flow on a monthly basis and overall affordability or maximum purchase price.
Nice. No, thank you so much for sharing that, Spencer. I hear a lot of myths, I think, sometimes about the financing side for investment properties. And I always like to have my clients speak with someone like yourself instead of them, you know, doing their Google search and finding out things that might not even be applicable in the same province that they're in. So I appreciate you sharing that. So it looks like, you know, rate, rental income, if they can use it or not, down payment, those things are obviously differentiators between the investment property side and the primary residence side. One of the other questions I had is really, what are the hurdles you're seeing? I know what I'm seeing, I think, from an investment perspective, but what are the biggest hurdles you see most clients having from a financing perspective when it comes to investment properties?
There are a few hurdles out there, but I'd probably say the biggest one would be either overall affordability, or it would just be a matter of getting that 20% down payment, assuming it is a full investment property or not owner occupied. The 20% down payment is pretty key, but I think that might be a bit steep for some people sometimes. So lenders typically want to see the majority of that down payment coming from own resources, and they sometimes will accept, say, a gift from family members for the other portion.
Got you. Yeah, no, that's something that I've seen with some of my clients as well. And there seems to be a little bit of confusion around that. So I think it's, again, good to talk with the mortgage broker like yourself before they're making any big decisions like this.
Yeah.
You know, what advice, and this is something I run into myself, because the first property I ever was involved with was a duplex situation. I lived in part of it, rented out the other by Western. And that was, you know, fun, but I had some situations where people didn't pay their rent, probably didn't really know what I was getting into exactly, had some help with, you know, family members on my side to get into that from a down payment perspective, paid them back, obviously, for the down payment, and then, you know, had to manage the tenants as well with help wherever I could get it. But, you know, when a tenant comes in and then they're not paying you, that kind of takes away the investment perspective very, totally, very quickly. And, you know, if I knew everything I know now, I would have done things, I think, a lot differently than I did when I was a lot younger than I am now. But definitely a good learning experience for me to have that duplex. So what advice would you have for someone that's really looking at getting into real estate investing in London?
I would just save your money, save it for the down payment, save it for closing costs, save it for any unexpected rentals or maintenance or any unexpected expenses. Similar to what you said, in case you have to carry the mortgage without the rental income for a month or two, right? That would be the number one suggestion from me. The second part would be, you know, maximize your affordability. And the best way to do that is just reduce any of your monthly liabilities as much as possible. So try and get rid of any credit card debts, any car loans, any student loans. I mean, again, it's just situational. But typically for first-time home buyers, it's a bit of a double-edged sword. Do you pay off debt or do you save for down payment? And, you know, that's where I come in, right? So I can always take a look at somebody's situation and say, okay, this is what I recommend. And then last two points I have is have a rock solid lease. So you can have some lawyers look over a lease and they might add a couple additions to your standard lease that might save you in the long run. And then the last part is have it like a network of trusted individuals to help out for those times where you need it. I mean, the prime example would be me with our rental property. I mean, they always tend to send a message when we're out of town. It just so happens that way. So that would be my advice.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. I was thinking that too from you'll find this funny, but whenever I go to town, it seems like all my clients want to go see houses too. So that's always, if you want to get busy, they say just leave for a little bit and I'm sure you'll be busy again. So that's something that I've seen too. I mean, I work with a lot of investor clients too. Some of them, you know, buying their second, third, sometimes they're buying their just their first investment property. And one of the biggest things I've seen is just that having that network together. So you have an electrician, you have a plumber, you have someone that's ready to come in and do some handy person type work as well, is really important, because there's going to be issues. There's going to be things that people need fixed. And obviously you're going to be the call that they make because you're the landlord. Same with the lease side. I've seen that before where people haven't maybe protected themselves as well as they should have. And it can come back to bite them with certain clauses. You know, and it goes both ways. I think sometimes landlords are a little bit, have a reputation for being a little bit overbearing on certain things. And I've seen some ridiculous things from landlords as well. But I've also seen some pretty ridiculous things from tenants too. So I think, you know, it's good to be fair as much as we possibly can.
Totally.
But the lease, I think, is a really good way to get that relationship started, because obviously people are signing off on what they should be doing and shouldn't be doing. So another, you know, getting to the last couple of questions I have here for you, Spencer, but is there a type of property that you find works best? Is it, do we need more than one unit? What is kind of working best for what you've been seeing with your clients?
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely say more than one unit certainly helps more so from a cash flow perspective. But financing tends to get a bit more tricky once you're above 3 to 4 units per property. You might get into, you know, potentially having to look at different lenders or alternative options, but it just kind of depends on what the specific lender allows in their threshold for lending, as well as the other side of that would be how many doors or rental properties are in, say, an investor's portfolio, right? Depending on the property itself, some lenders may want to scale back their overall exposure, so they may want to see a down payment of 25% or and then it also depends from a personal point of view or personal perspective on, you know, what can you handle with regards to maintenance, upkeep, and managing those tenants. So definitely more than one, but I don't go crazy and purchase like a 12-plex or something.
Yeah, no, I've seen that too, where I have some folks that aren't even really from the area that want to buy in the area, and I've said, okay, if you're willing to pay, you know, property management fees, of course, you know, but make sure your numbers work according to that. Don't think that every time, you know, you need something fixed that you're going to come down from 2, 3, 4 hours away and fix that thing. You're going to have to get someone that's on the ground that's willing to help your tenant within hours, not within days. Yeah. So correct. I think that's, you know, that's something I noticed when I've been involved with tenant situations, either with clients or personally. I've definitely seen how it may not make the most number sense to do something that I want to do, but it might make the personal sense, because I, you know, I still have a family that I want to hang out with sometimes, and I don't want to be up at night thinking about something for a 12-plex that I just, you know, don't really want to get involved with. So yeah, that's something that I really like that point. That's something I think you got to think about, always the investment perspective, but also the personal. I call it the PETA factor, which stands for pain in the butt factor, but we'll change the butt to the other word. I don't think I'm allowed to swear on the podcast, so I'll change it to that, but it's definitely something that I talk to my clients about a lot. And it is something that needs to be considered in the scenario. So, you know, I know too, with some of my clients, they've been refinancing a current property to get into real estate investing. What's that process like from a mortgage perspective?
Well, it's fairly straightforward. I mean, given the significant growth that London has experienced easily over the last 2.5-3 years with regards to real estate values, there's plenty of equity in homes for people to access. So it's easy for clients to possibly refinance their current home, pull out that equity, and then take it and use that as their 20% down payment on an investment property. We just have to consider all things. So can the client afford the refinance? And then when it's all said and done and they have a potential rental property that they've purchased, can they afford everything as a whole? And what does that look like? Taking into consideration old mortgage, old property taxes, et cetera, along with rental property, new mortgage, rental property income, property taxes, and all the expenses along with that. So it can be done. You just got to look, take a look at the overall, what's the end goal and what's the overall picture look like at the end, and will the lenders accept it based on overall affordability?
Nice. No, that makes sense. That wraps up really the questions that I had to ask. I think that was really helpful for the podcast to get an idea of how they really can get involved, what they should be thinking about. What would you recommend someone do if they want to maybe buy their first investment perspective? Would they have a chat with you kind of earlier on in that process, or how do you normally handle that?
Yeah, I always recommend if purchasing a property is even on somebody's mind, reach out well ahead of time. That way we can take a look at, you know, your current situation. Obviously, I understand where you want to be, whether it's purchasing an investment property or purchasing an owner-occupied property. But if we have that chat sooner rather than later, then we can kind of come up with a game plan, whether it's saving for down payment, whether it's paying off debt. Maybe there needs to be some credit restore, but I really don't mind advising ahead of time so that people are kind of pointed in the right direction, and it kind of sets them up for success. So
nice. Yeah. No, that's really helpful. So if someone does want to get a hold of you, what's the best way to do that, Spencer?
So cell phone or email tends to work best. My cell phone number is 519-719-4565, or my email address is Spencer, S-P-E-N-C-E-R, .Murray, M-U-R-R-A-Y, at modernmortgage.co. So that's modernmortgage.co.
Yeah. So just a reminder, people, it's .co, it's not .com.
Correct.
Cause I've screwed that up myself, I think. So, yeah. And just a reminder too, for everyone listening, if you want to get a hold of me, or maybe you have an idea for a future podcast episode, I'm very open to suggestions. And honestly, this is a suggestion that we had. So this is why I contacted Spencer, because I had someone that recommended having this chat because they were looking at getting an investment side, and that now actually they have. And this is where this idea came from. So if you have any ideas for the podcast or any questions from a real estate perspective for me, you can always text me. My number is 226-977-2348. So it's the same number as before, but please remember, I'm now with the House Sigma team in London. So my email is philbailey@housesigma.com. It is .com, not what Spencer's URL is there. Is there anything else kind of, Spencer, that you wanted to add, other than, you know, people can get in touch and kind of start that process with you?
Yeah, just feel free to reach out and get on it earlier, sooner rather than later. But no, I appreciate you having me on here. This has been a lot of fun, and hopefully more questions come up.
Absolutely. No, I'm sure they will. I'll put the all the contact information to folks, for everyone listening, into the show notes. And again, if you have any suggestions for future episodes, please contact me. So this has been the London, Ontario Real Estate Podcast. I'm Phil Bailey, a realtor in London with the House Sigma team. Thanks so much for listening.